Hey everybody, Merry Christmas, Happy Boxing Day, whatever, or Happy Hanukkah, or Happy Non-Denominational Holiday if you want to be one of those arseholes. My name's Kenny, this is The Raw Rundown, I'm here with David. Hi David.
Happy Winter Solstice, everyone. Is that the kind of asshole you were talking about, Kenny?
Essentially, well, you know, speaking of those kind of assholes, do you know that there has been a study, and I am not shitting you here, that there is a call for Father Christmas to be renamed?
Like, so they would want Santa Claus? Or just the name Father Christmas?
According to several reports, there have been calls for the magical figure of Father Christmas to be called Person Christmas.
Oh my god.
Because they want Santa to be more gender fluid. So here is my question. And I mean this with all sincerity, but I feel like anybody who has a brain that functions should be able to get this. So trust me, I mean this 100%. The people that go through this are braver than I ever could be. If I ever was like, oh god, you know, I don't feel comfortable in my body, I want to change gender, right?
Sure,
and,
of course.
And you go through a lot of, I assume you go through a lot of hard soul searching and things to get to that point. And then, so say I was a woman, right, and I had made the decision to become a man.
Sure.
Who fucking cares what Santa's called? What fucking part of your gender fluidity bullshit is going to have anything to do with Santa was a fucking man! Don't give Santa a sex change to see if you'll better be your day! Fuck off!
I mean, there was a Mrs. Claus, right? I mean, like...
Oh, no, we can't call her Mrs. Claus.
I've known people who were happily married and then one turned out to be gay later in life, but you would think that involves some soul-searching, Kenny. You would think that Santa, an omnipresent being who's been around for centuries and millennia, would know what the fuck is going on inside his head and with his body by now, right?
Just
like you'd think Santa would have his shit together, you know? Like, we're all figuring this out. I still don't have my shit together, but Santa has been alive a lot longer than I have.
You think Santa, when he's got billions of presents to deliver every year and prep it, has he got time to go and have a sex change?
Well, Kenny, he does have slaves.
Well, I mean, let's not delve too far into Santa and ruin it. But, you know, nobody's perfect, is what I'm saying.
That's the new thing that all the kids are going on about now, is that Santa is a capitalist pig. And the Grinch, actually, being anti-consumerism and anti-capitalism, is actually the way to go for the season, Kenny.
Who says that, though? Who? Find me these people. And So you've had your sex change, or say somebody in your family's had a sex change, and there's a lot of trauma involved in that. Saying that 100% seriously, there is a lot of trauma involved in that kind of decision.
Absolutely.
Does saying Person Christmas make you feel better?
I think the issue, Kenny, is that everyone wants to make things about themselves, right? Like, everyone thinks that they are the center of the universe, except me, because I am the center of the universe. But everyone else likes to pretend that they are, right? So they like to co-opt their life experiences onto others. It's like whenever you get into a conversation with somebody and, you know, the guy goes, yeah, you know, I had stage 4 lung cancer, and right after I beat that, you know, I happened to have open heart surgery, and then right after that, I got lung cancer, you know, and right now it's in remission, but, you know, I really hope that everything turns out okay. And then somebody like me comes along and goes, I know exactly how you feel. I have 2 stents.
I think that's the exact same thing.
Yeah. Everyone likes to co-opt other people's issues or project their own trials and tribulations and their own life experiences onto others. It's a way that we relate to people, Kenny. But, I mean, fucking, it's Santa Claus. He's not even real. I hate to break it to you guys, but, you know, you can...
Whoa, 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 whoa.
You can stop thinking about this too hard, you know?
I was going through all my Christmas movies, and one of the ones that I watched on Christmas Eve was The Polar Express. Have you ever watched that?
Sure. Never seen it.
Cry like a baby every time. I cannot get through it. Oh my God, I just can't do it. It's so, because I'm going to spoil it, but the story of the movie,
sure.
It's an animated movie. The story is this boy who's like 9 years old, I think, and he doesn't believe in Santa, and he goes to sleep on Christmas Eve, and in the middle of the night he wakes up, and there's this huge train parked outside his house, and he gets on, it takes him to the North Pole, and eventually he meets Santa, and he believes, and he has this little bell that he hears it ring in his head, but you can only hear the bell ring if you believe. And he's narrating it, and at the end, he's got the bell, and he's narrating it going, I still hear the bell today because I believe. I was crying like a bitch. I could not control myself. But that's what it's all about. Christmas is about crying like a bitch, no matter what side you sit on. It's not about person Christmas!
Kenny, do you know what made me cry like a bitch?
What?
Whenever I opened up your goddamn present and saw Stephanie fucking McMahon staring back at me.
Well, you know, the funniest thing happened because I was getting your gifts ready, and I got you 3 gifts, the third of which has not arrived yet, so you're going to have to explain.
I did hear a knock on my door, but it's 10 degrees outside. I don't know how degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is. Celsius, let's see. But it's very cold outside, Kenny.
Okay.
Here we go. Let's see here. I've got it up. Let's do the calculator. Minus 12, apparently, for you guys. So
Jesus.
So that's what it is outside right now, and it's snowing. And so someone knocked and put something under my nook to where no snow can get to it. I'll go out there later whenever I have to fucking jog in this shit. So whenever I do that, that's when I will go and get that. Got to stay healthy, Kenny. I don't want to have lung cancer like that poor fellow I was talking about before.
No, he who has actual problems.
Yeah, exactly. But I will get that gift. Kenny, you got me a wonderful WCW gift set, though. And I love it so much because it has Bill Goldberg, Ric Flair and DDP, 3 of my utmost favorites in WCW.
Can I just, before you explain the fourth one here, I want to explain to you my thought process behind this. So
sure.
I'm going to get David some stuff for Christmas, and I'm like, okay, it has to be through Amazon, or sorry, I can't say Amazon because David gets like, where's the O? he talks to me like a twat, is what I'm trying to say. But anyway.
Yes. He's like, you need to order it from Amazon. By the way, if you go to Amazon, you can hit our link up and give us free money. Kenny, we got to plug the shit out of that.
InsideTheRopes.co.uk/Amazon. Pick your store, US, Canada, or UK. And that just redirects you to the Amazon homepage. Order as usual. It doesn't cost you any extra, but we get a little bit of a kickback. So, yeah, some of you have already done it, so thank you very much. This is weird. So I've got Amazon Prime here in the UK. So I just thought that it transferred to the US one. No. You have to get a separate Amazon Prime over there. So I had to sign up for
this. Which is just ridiculous.
So I obviously signed up for the free trial, ordered your stuff, and then deleted the free trial. But anyway.
Of course.
So because it was Amazon, I had to be able, that's the only, Amazon's the only one that I feel 100% comfortable. If they say it's going to get there before Christmas, it will. Otherwise, it's ropey. So anyway, so I'm like, right, okay, I want to get him something different. He's a WCW guy. That was his thing when he grew up. So I want to see what WCW stuff we've got, but you can't really go down the DVD route because you don't know what you have or what you don't have, and you've pretty much seen everything anyway.
Yeah, and plus, if you have the network, you can just hop on and watch anything you want anyway.
Exactly. So I just happened to stumble across the Fearsome Foursome pack. Now,
I love a good Fearsome Foursome, Kenny.
Well, you usually do a gruesome twosome, but that's another story. I saw it, and I don't know how I missed it in hindsight, but the picture that I saw did not depict what actually happened when it was really a fearsome 3.5-some that turned up to the party.
So the fourth figure in this set is Chris Benoit. Who, you know, I mean, all murdering his family aside, I love Chris Benoit. I thought he was excellent. He was one of my favorite WCW performers.
Dad of the Year multiple times.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But like this was something else, you guys. I wasn't quite expecting this. The Chris Benoit figure is literally like an inch smaller than every other figure in the set. And like Goldberg, you can understand. Goldberg's a huge dude, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then there's DDP, and you're all like, well, I don't know about that one so much. But then the real kicker, Ric Flair, is in real life, you know, about the same height, I would say, as Chris Benoit, pretty close to it, same size. Benoit, very, very muscular compared to Flair. Flair was always known for the cardio, not really the weight room. So this is very mind-boggling, Kenny, because Chris Benoit is much smaller. He's a little midge Chris Benoit, you know? He's like the rabid pussycat, if you will, as opposed to the Wolverine. In fact, if this Chris Benoit were still alive, I might even hire him for MMW.
The thing is, I feel like I need to keep my banter at such a minimum with Chris Benoit, so I'm going to continue that. There's not many things where I go, I'm not touching that, but that's one of them.
I was gonna say. You have delved into the STDs of Urban Dictionary as of late. Who, by the way, I had a listener and a close personal friend come up to me and go, "What the fuck was that?" Regarding our fish and sausage dinner or whatever it was. Supper.
Fish supper, and the fish right, sausage right. Supper. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, that's permanently traumatized people and myself. But Chris Benoit, completely off limits for you. I will say, though, I love the WCW figures because WCW was always way behind the curve with WWE, right?
Yep.
So whenever the WWE figures would come out in the 90s, like they had the Hasbro figures, you know, and whenever they got the Hasbro figures, then WCW picked up the old LJN license and made these very bulky figures that couldn't move. They were not action figures. They were, it was like something, it was worse than something you would find at a dollar store or a Poundland.
Yeah, they were called Galoobs, right? That was the brand name.
Galoob, yeah. It was LJN's Galoob. It was the same company, though.
And they had like, the one I remember was they had gorgeous Jimmy Garvin, and the pose that he had was squatting like he was taking a shit. because like if you lived in the UK, you pretty much had Hasbro figures, and like somehow you'd end up with like a stray WCW Galoob figure. It would always happen.
Yeah.
But the thing that was the most troubling.
Now, did you guys have any of the WWF LJN Galoob figures?
No, I don't think we did. I think Hasbro were the first license to pick up over here.
My very first figure was an LJN Hillbilly Jim WWF from like 1988.
Isn't that an apt figure for you to have?
Isn't it? It truly is. My camera is terrible at taking pictures right now, Kenny, but I'm going to take a picture across the room from me and send it to you. I actually picked up a little cheap plug, RBI Crew 7 here in St. Louis. Got a shipment of old WCW Galoob figures, and they sold one to me at a good price. So I will ship that right over to you.
When we did the Scott Steiner tour, Jamie, one of our crew, was talking, because it was always very weird that the Galoob license didn't last that long.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that Randy Savage is sexual.
Isn't that great? It is a Macho Man Randy Savage, and he's doing the pose. Kind of looks like he's sticking his finger up in the air, you know?
The ones that I'm talking about are the ones a little bit earlier. That's a great one. The one that you sent me, we'll put online, it's like the kind of 1994 San Francisco Toy Makers line, which, by the way, were a horrendous toy line, because WWF had, like, you know, series 1 to 8, and then, like, the tag series and the ringside series, all these different ones. But like, if you try and find the trajectory or the kind of like guide to all the WCW figures, there's no lineage. They do like two series, and it spawns off into all these. They're all different sizes. They're all different shapes.
Yeah, but they have no clue what's going on.
But what was so great about it is over here in the UK, so like I say, in the early 90s, like 91, 92, you always ended up with a stray Gloob figure. Now, the Gloob line that they had very limited people. They had, like, El Gigante, Ric Flair, Garvin, Dustin Rhodes, Sting. Yeah, yeah, those kind of ones.
Yeah, I believe they had Doom as well.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know if we got Doom over here, because you guys got a lot more than we did. But, like, I always remember, specifically the Jimmy Garvin one. So there's a couple of them that kind of, like I say, squatted like they were doing a shit. And, like, remember when you were younger, that if when you played with your figures, eventually some paint would wear off?
Oh, yeah, they were notorious for losing paint.
But on the Gloob ones, the paint would come off of the arse!
They would! They would, and the paint would come off, and it was the rest of the figure. It wasn't like they were, like, a solid white or anything like that. It was flesh-colored.
Painted it flesh-colored underneath!
Yeah, underneath the tights, it was flesh-colored. So if you played with your Ric Flair figure enough, he would have a bare ass, you guys. His ass cheeks would just be, like, shining in the moonlight.
And, like, what, you know, I can only imagine now, like, what an adult would say, why the fuck is he playing with the arse bit of it so much?
Explains a lot with how we turned out, Ken.
I'm not saying it. I'm not going there. But it's funny, because, so Scott, I'll try and get the story correct for next week. But I remember Scott Steiner was telling Jamie, do you know why WCW lost the Gloob license?
No, I have no clue.
They lost it because of Ric Flair.
Really? Because
Ric Flair, I can't remember what it was. It's something with Ric Flair owed money to the Gloob guy, and then he didn't pay it back, and then they were like, right, fuck you guys, and just left the deal. But I'll find out what exactly it was for next week, but that was what it was. And
For the record, though, I actually enjoyed those WCW Gloob figures. That was my first introduction to WCW. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I did not, and that was 92, yeah. Well, it's funny,
1990 in the States.
1990 in the States. So in the UK, I think WCW was shown on, like, ITV, which is, like, your version of ABC, say?
Sure, sure.
But they had, like, a really strange time that it was on, like, 2 in the morning or something for an hour. Right. And, like, this was before you could, like, I don't think you could record. I don't think you could, like, time a recording, but there was something you could do where, like, if you bought, like, a magazine, like a TV guide, certain video recorders had a thing called Video Plus, where you could type a every program would have like a 7-8-digit number at the end, and if you had a Video Plus recorder, it would automatically record whatever that program is at the time.
Yeah.
It would come on. But so I never got to see WCW is the point. And then in 94, when PowerSlam came out, they would have an advert for WCW's merchandise, and they would have like all these figures out. And it's like Hulk Hogan, when he just joined and stuff. And it's funny because you can see when Hogan joined that they were like, we need to market the shit out of this guy. Like, before there was nothing. Now they were like, we're yellow! And that was essentially it. So
so good though, right?
Fun time. But I did want to say, so I bought you the WCW thing, and then I was about to go and buy another figure or thing when I got an email from WWE, and they'd said that Stephanie had stumbled across the Raw Rundown, and she felt...
We talk really bad about her.
Well, one of us does. I am obviously going to be doing the best of Stephanie McMahon podcast on Patreon.
Obviously. So all the bad times that it sounded like you were talking bad about her, that was just me doing a really good Kenny McIntosh. Is that it?
No, what it was is there was certain things that you just didn't, you couldn't say with your weird accent, so you would have me say them, but that was all you. But she asked me.
Your lines, like somebody, pal.
She said, she wants to be involved in your Christmas. She felt that you needed more Stephanie in your life. So who was I to stop that from happening? So I'm curious, right? So that's the first present you open. Take us through your reaction, David, when you open up and find Stephanie in all of her Terminator glory.
I opened all of my wife's gifts to me first, Kenny, because I needed to save yours for last.
Oh, God, no pressure.
Because, you know, I thought, oh, my good friend Kenny, so excited. He loves gift giving. He loves Christmas as much as we do in our household. You know, I think that he's going to really knock it out of the park with this gift giving. He's going to get me something that resonates with my very soul. You know? So I decided to open up this gift, and I looked at Val, and I smiled at her, and I said, you know, Kenny's not going to let us down this year. He's going to get something that definitely won't be a Stephanie McMahon action figure. And she smiled, and she nodded, and she goes, you got to have faith in humanity, honey. And I said, all right, here we go. And I opened it up. Kenny? That
yes.
Bitch staring right back into my soul. Just glaring right through that plastic, looking right at me with that smug look on her face. And, you know, I've never in my life felt more emasculated.
I love the idea you're sitting at the dinner table. What's wrong? Stephanie emasculated me. How? She's in packaging. She could talk through packaging.
She don't need to talk. She could speak with her eyes.
To be fair, it's one of the best $10 I've ever spent.
Yeah.
It was on sale. I was like, well.
Yeah, of course it was. Of course it was.
That was the sign that it had to happen.
That's like a, usually I get people like, gag gifts and things like that. Not you, you know, I felt highly enough of you, Kenny, to just, go full out and get you a wonderful full set of the, Hasbro vintage action figures with the Shield and, your boy Goldberg, who you did a tour with in 2017. 2017, by the way, an excellent year for Inside the Ropes and all of the tours. Bravo, Kenny. I'm very proud of you. And including the elusive AJ Styles action figure, Kenny. You know what wasn't in that set?
What?
A fucking Stephanie McMahon figure!
Well, you know, listen, you got me a fearsome foursome. Sorry, I got you a fearsome foursome, you got me a fabulous foursome. And it's funny because...
You could say. A phenomenal
foursome. And yeah, it's funny because, you know, Dean Ambrose, we interviewed him at WrestleMania weekend. Seth Rollins, we interviewed him at SummerSlam weekend. It was so dull, we never aired it. genuinely. AJ Styles, we interviewed him this year. And then Goldberg, we had a tour with him. So they were all connected a little bit to Inside the Ropes. It's funny because my mum had actually got me some of the Series 2 Hasbro. Mattel Retros, Steve Austin, Sting, The Rock, and Triple H. And then I opened yours, and you got me Series 3. And it was a lovely... They're currently sitting on my floor, spaced out right now. I can see them. And yeah, so it was a great gift. I got some really nice stuff this year. Got to spend some time with some friends and some family. It was good. But yeah, and it's now Boxing Day. So we're now officially on Boxing Day, close to New Year's. So, it's a good time.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Now, Kenny, I do have a question for you, though. What the fuck is a Boxing Day?
Well, so Boxing Day is the day after Christmas, and it's kind of like, you know, you might, maybe on Boxing Day you'll have, like, your people who aren't important enough to spend Christmas Day with, but you'll spend Boxing Day with them, or you will
go out to food. It's an extension of Christmas?
It's like the NXT.
Okay, all right. So
Christmas Day is WrestleMania, Boxing Day is NXT.
Gotcha. So, you know, you got like CMLL, and then you've got MMW. That's essentially what it is. Just a bunch of midgets jumping around.
I can't hang about with midgets. They freak me out. I feel like if I stand beside a midget, they think it's David and Goliath, and I feel really uncomfortable.
That's completely fair. Have I ever told the story on air about the encounter I had with a midget outside of wrestling?
No, but I feel there's no better time than on Boxing Day. In all seriousness, I have no fucking clue what Boxing Day is.
Now, as a kid, I always thought that Boxing Day was the day that people went out and they punched all the people that they got presents from that were shitty.
There are areas of Glasgow where I think that's what they adopt it as. but apparently, the origin for Boxing Day is in the mid-19th century, there's a custom of giving tradespeople a Christmas box on this day.
That sounds really boring. I like the idea that it's like, well, I didn't have a gift receipt, so you get to punch me in the mouth. It's like one of those deals.
There's a lot of people who I would very happily have a deal that I could just punch them in the mouth. But anyway, so tell us about the midget that you met, not involved in wrestling.
So this it was at my this is going to sound really lewd. It was at my buddy's bachelor party, and we went out drinking to this bar, and I shit you not, there was a motorcycle gang there comprised of nothing but midgets, and they were having a pool tournament.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Midgets on bikes in a pool tournament.
Pool meaning, I don't know if pool is a thing that you guys use over there. Billiards. Billiards. Yeah, snooker, that type of thing. So yes, a billiards tournament in the bar. This gang of midgets on motorcycles wearing leathers and everything. They would, put the step stool up, against the billiards table. They would get up and they would take their shot and then go and rearrange the furniture some more and go and rinse and repeat. And these guys were drinking by the pitcher, Kenny. They weren't even drinking like a glass or anything. They just order a pitcher and drink out of it. And I'm over here, Mr. Lightweight. I'm on like four beers and the world's spinning. And I look over and these guys are just chugging the beer out of the pitcher and slamming it down. I am the world's worst pool player. I am just absolutely, utterly terrible at it. And these guys were fucking completely buzzed off their ass, probably going driving afterwards, a midget on a motorcycle, imagine that.
Can I ask a really, like, un-PC question about midgets?
Yeah, feel free. I mean, I am not one, so, you know. And by the way, we are allowed to use that term. We have been granted access by Hornswoggle to use that term.
Big friend of the show. Well, not a big friend of the show. Friend of the show. but right, so see if you're a midget, right?
Sure. A little person. Whatever. I feel like we're using the M word too much now.
If you are under 5 feet.
Sure.
Or now, does that mean that you can just get drunk a lot cheaper and faster? Because that could sway me into maybe becoming a midget.
What are you going to do? Just have, like, your calves removed? Like, what's
that's
going
that's
on?
Listen, right. So, if you take an average of how much you spend on a night out for booze, and say it's, like, 40 quid.
Sure.
If I can get drunk on a tenner, I mean, I might need a wee ladder to get to the cupboard, but... Hey, maybe that kills two birds with one stone. Cheaper night out. Cardio getting up the ladder.
Yeah, I will say, Val, while not a midget, is a major lightweight. And the other day for Christmas Eve dinner, we went out and she ordered a sangria. And on one sangria, she was like cackling with laughter and falling over. And once she sobered up, she goes, God, I'm so happy I'm a lightweight. And then I go, oh, yeah? And she goes, yeah, do you know how cheap it is to get drunk? And I'm like, yep, yeah, there you go. So, I mean, maybe you should have that calf removal surgery.
Sure. Okay, so, right, now you said that the midgets were playing pool.
Yeah.
Was it a smaller table?
No. A regular size table. And they would just prop bar stools up and stand on the bar stools and take their shot. And they were good, too. I am terrible at it. And I'm just sitting there. I stopped playing at one point, and I was just watching them. Because I was just like, this is fucking amazing. They were killing it, and they were dead drunk, too. And, of course, my buddy runs into one and knocks him over off of the stool. And they're a fucking biker gang, Kenny. And they're fucking low enough to stab you right in your Achilles.
I mean, I don't know what you want me to say to that. I don't know where I'm supposed to go.
How would you react if you knocked over a biker gang midget from his stool while he's standing on it? What would you do?
I think if I saw midgets playing pool, I would stay far away from it because I think I'm the wrong person to be around that. Because I'd find it too funny, but like I shouldn't find it funny.
Sure, you don't want to laugh, but at the same time,
I guess if I knocked one of them,
play billiards though. There's only two billiards tables. They got the other one. They're right next to each other. Kenny, what do you do?
If I knocked one of them over, I'd help him up and I'd offer to buy him a drink.
That is exactly what my buddy did.
Good.
And everything was smoothed over. My buddy said, hey, guys, I'm really sorry about that. How about I buy you all a round? And then he brought over 4 pitchers of beer, and then they were all happy. So there you go.
There you go.
That's your life lesson, you guys. That is your life lesson. If you knock over a midget who is trying to play billiards, offer to buy him and the rest of the midget biker gang drinks. That's your life lesson for this week's Raw Rundown.
So if anyone has that happen to them in a real-life situation, be sure to let us know. I won't hold out hope that it's going to happen imminently.
Yes. So, go out and make it happen. Be the change in the world that you want to see.
Fucking hell. So, let's talk about Raw, Chicago, Christmas night. It's the first time I think they've broadcast live on Christmas in WWE. So, overall, I think I had very, very, very low expectations for the show. So it was probably slightly above what I thought it was going to be, but that's not a compliment to the show. That's really a compliment to how terrible Christmas shows are usually. Overall, did you watch it live, or did you at least have the decency to wait till today to watch it?
We watched it last night, actually, after it aired. But, like, I think we started around 9, you know, which is an hour before it ends. So it's not like we were doing anything, Kenny.
So what, going into Raw, how were both of you feeling? Just before Raw, were you feeling festive? Were you feeling happy? What was your Christmas mood at that point?
I was a little depressed because, like, I had been sitting around all day. The wife got up early and wanted to open presents, so we did that. That's always the fun part of Christmas. But to be honest with you, I was a bit depressed. I was all alone because the wife was sleeping for a bit. And just got to thinking about all the Christmases that I would spend with my mom and dad, and can't do that no more. So I was a bit down. So better Christmases have passed, Kenny, to say the least. And so the wife woke up, and I thought, I'm going to cook dinner. Nothing special, nothing festive. We don't really do that in our house. But I was like, I'm going to cook dinner, and we'll have a nice, lovely evening, and maybe Raw will cheer me up a bit.
So, now that you've depressed all the listeners,
yes,
you watch Raw, you get to the end of it, how was your mood when it had finished?
I was sort of like sitting there singing the saddest version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. I fucking put on Tori Amos's version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and I was just sitting there weeping into a glass.
Can you imagine imagine hanging out with Tori Amos on Christmas? Oh. So Raw did not get you back in the festive mood, is what you're saying?
No. I was hoping for a pick me up, and instead I got too much of Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, and a title change I didn't want to see happen.
Okay, well, let's get into it. So they kick off Raw with John Cena coming out. Everyone, he ends up giving his t-shirt and hat to a young Make-A-Wish kid and said that, you know, he had the wrong colored hat and shirt on. Cena being very focused on making sure the fans at home know to buy his new merchandise. So,
yeah. The fan was wearing the old merchandise. You have to wear the new stuff, you guys. Otherwise, he doesn't make more money on those checks.
So Cena comes in. The fans are pretty behind him. Fans are chatting Merry Christmas and all that sort of stuff.
I did like the fans that would go, Merry Christmas, and then the other half would go, Christmas sucks!
I like to think that was just Sondra and a bunch of rogue carolers. Anyway, so Elias interrupts with his guitar. He says that WWE stands for Walk with Elias. He says, who wants to walk with me? There was a loud chant of CM Punk. And Elias said, I can assure you that CM Punk will not interrupt me tonight. Cena tries to suck up and saying that, you know, the fans love their fellow Chicagoans. And another punk chant comes out. I was really poking the bear. What my favorite bit of this was, like, so Cena's there. He gets the stool for Elias. And Elias is like, you know, basically, can I have a little bit of room here? And then they cut the light so you can only see Elias. So Cena's standing in the dark. And it was just a great visual. Just shut the lights off, Cena. Just, there's no need.
How wonderful, though, is Elias? Not whenever the bell rings, but how wonderful is Elias before that bell rings, Kenny?
Oh, he's a delight, and then he wrestles and it brings it back down to an even keel.
I will say, I am always ready to walk with Elias until that damn bell rings, and then after that, I am ready to walk to my bed and go to sleep.
So Elias and Cena end up having a match, because Elias punches Cena out to the delight of the Chicago crowd. And they have a match. The match goes 16 minutes on Christmas. What do you think of this match? John Cena got the win.
Huge boring chance for this match right at the very end. And then they just immediately went home right after the boring chance. Cena was like, nope, we're not doing this shit anymore.
Yeah, he gave up immediately.
He did. They didn't even try to salvage it. The second the boring chance hit in, it was like, nope, done, boom. Get the fuck out. So funny. This match was dreadful. This was a really bad match. Everything looked like it was in slow motion. He went for that crossroads, and man, oh man, it took him like, I don't know, 7 seconds to set it up.
The thing that kind of I was thinking about coming out of this match. So I mean, it was John Cena versus Elias. So you know, it's like having a pizza taken away from you and given stale bread.
Yeah,
there's only one way you can go.
That's happened to me. So I can, yeah, I can.
But like one thing I was thinking about is the diminishing return of John Cena. Like,
yeah.
When was the last time John Cena had a great match? The Royal Rumble. So it's almost a year. And if you look at what he's done this year, like, you know, the Elimination Chamber thing was fun. The WrestleMania match was nothing. SummerSlam was nothing. The Roman Reigns match was decent, but not really memorable. The Survivor Series thing was nothing. And now he's come back and it's, you know, I know it's Christmas and maybe you don't want to set him up yet, but Cena kind of feels just like another guy, almost.
Yeah, this is, it's time to start putting him in high-profile matches.
But I will say this, though. I think that I'm starting to realize that Roman Reigns is a better wrestler than John Cena.
Oh, yeah.
The Roman Reigns-Elias match was much better than this. And,
well, I mean,
this was terrible, so I mean, it's not really a high praise, but like, because how old is Reigns again? Is he like 31, 32?
He's quite young. A little bit older than that, right? Let me look.
Yeah, figure out what age he is.
Roman Reigns. Yeah, let's see. Roman Reigns' age. 32, you are correct. Oh my god, I'm older than Roman Reigns. Fuck me.
You thought you were depressed on Christmas. There's a Boxing Day punch for you.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas as I drink in this.
Can we have a rule that 1 year we don't have hipster fucks ruining Christmas songs? Just like have nice cheery Christmas songs.
You know, I would prefer to have a year where we never hear a white woman cover Santa Baby ever again.
That would be preferable. I remember one year...
That would be way preferred. Every single fucking white woman feels the need to cover Santa Baby. It's like, Santa Baby is not even that good of a Christmas song. It's really fucking creepy. She's trying to fuck Santa Claus. And we've already established that he has no need to be fucking around anymore. He can't even get his own shit together, Kenny.
It's a problem.
He doesn't need some promiscuous young woman. Some promiscuous young lass showing him some leg. Santa Baby trying to light some fires in the chimney and all this shit. No, quit barking up that tree. He's got enough on his mind. He's got deadlines to make.
Constantly.
364 days away, Kenny. Them toys don't build themselves. He's got to crack all them slaves into shape.
Anyway, but what do you think... The thing with John Cena, is it a creative problem or is it partially down to Cena? Because, you know, he became a free agent, when was it? Was it like July? It was in July they announced he was a free agent, I think.
Yeah.
And then, so he comes back on SmackDown in July. He faces Rusev at Battleground. He faces Baron Corbin at SummerSlam in two of the most meaningless matches ever. He has the match with Roman, which there was like a little shade of some interesting stuff in the build-up, but it never really hit the third gear on Raw. Then he just randomly joins Team SmackDown for Survivor Series, never gives the reasons to why he's doing it. And then he's back on SmackDown, back on Raw again with no explanation. Like, is it just me or like the sort of laziness with which the free agent booking has been presented has kind of hurt the John Cena character?
No, it has. He feels very non-committal due to it. It's like he doesn't really care one way or the other. He's not committed to one brand or the other. He's not committed to any feud because he can just bounce away to and fro. I have a feeling that they're going to shape the first half of 2018 around John Cena, though. It wouldn't surprise me if he was the one to win the Royal Rumble and face AJ Styles for the title at WrestleMania and win his 17th championship and break that record that Ric Flair set. So, I don't know, Kenny. What say you? Do you see him in that type of role?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because there was an ad that came out. I think it was for Fastlane? I think it was. There's like an ad in the local area where AJ Styles is defending the WWE title in a five-way against Nakamura, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, and Sami Zayn. Which pretty much tells you that none of those four are facing AJ Styles at WrestleMania. So, is Cena the only answer? He probably is. But, like, I think what I would like to see for the Royal Rumble, and it's nothing to do with me not liking... I actually think John Cena, AJ Styles at WrestleMania would be great.
Yeah.
So, it's not that I'm against that match. But it's just more... Like, the Royal Rumble used to be when, you know, you would get your first big win going into a title match at the Royal Rumble. And the last few years, it's kind of felt like it's just the same thing. You know, it's Roman Reigns, Randy Orton gets it again, etc. Like, I'd like to see something new win a Royal Rumble. You know, like...
Yeah. Someone exciting. Someone, like...
Like Braun Strowman or Kevin Owens or Nakamura or...
Somebody we actually want to see in the spotlight, which is why it'll never happen. The Royal Rumble for years was my favorite pay-per-view, and now it's absolutely not. And the reason being, they have pounded me into submission, and I no longer care about the Royal Rumble. Why? Because every time they have a Royal Rumble, some guy, some schmuck that I don't give one iota of a singular fuck about, ends up winning. And it's always disappointing. I haven't walked away since I've been watching WWE again after my hiatus. I haven't walked away feeling like excited or anything about the Royal Rumble after it airs. I always feel disappointed after the Royal Rumble. So, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me 75 other times, shame on you. So, yeah. I'm done with it.
And see, it's funny, like, I can kind of separate, do I enjoy a Rumble match compared to who wins it? But...
See, I absolutely can't. I just can't.
Which is fine. I mean, I get it. And the thing is, I do have this, like, feeling in my head going, oh, Cena's going to win the Rumble, isn't he? And it's like... And it's funny because I actually really would like John Cena versus AJ Styles at WrestleMania. I'd prefer Nakamura, but... Like, I would like AJ Styles and Cena at WrestleMania. I think it would be a great match, but I'd almost rather that, like... Maybe like a... But then if a Raw guy wins the Rumble, it's got... I mean, if the choice is Roman or Cena, can I just be euthanized instead?
And honestly, though, I feel, you know, everybody goes, who's winning the Rumble? It's Nakamura, right? It's going to be Nakamura. I'm like, no. Calm your proverbial tits, you guys. Because it's not going to be Nakamura. It's not going to be anybody that you like. It's going to end up being John Cena or Roman Reigns. Get used to it. That's the way that the Royal Rumble works now.
It is a
concept solely built and fueled on your frustration and your anger and your tears.
But isn't it funny though that, like, you know, I was watching the 2017 Royal Rumble match back at the weekend. And I was watching with a friend of mine, and I actually really enjoyed the match, more than I remember at the time. And there's some really cool spots in it and stuff. And at the end, they have, you know, Roman Reigns out at 30, and then by the time Randy Orton puts him out. People are just so happy that Roman Reigns didn't win it that they'd cheer Randy Orton. They're like, yay, Roman didn't win.
I thought that was a good plot device that they used last year, because like everybody at the party that I went to, they were all screaming, yay, Roman didn't win. And I'm just sitting there with my arms crossed. I'm like, you fucking lemmings.
You knew what was coming.
Exactly. You guys bought it exactly the way that they drew it up. You fucking, ugh.
The thing is, like, the Royal Rumble used to be where you would get the beginning of what you wanted, you know, and then you would, and then it would lead to WrestleMania. And it's like, I don't know, the last time I think that we were all truly behind the same person was Daniel Bryan.
Yes.
And he never got to win the Royal Rumble. But, yeah, I mean, so I guess we'll see. We'll see what they do with John Cena. But, and I'll tell you this, the thing that, do you know what it might be? It might be that John Cena wins the Royal Rumble and then he gets to choose which champion he faces.
Yeah, no.
Because he's a free agent.
Yeah, yeah. No, that will be what it is, and he will, I think that he will fight for the championship that AJ Styles holds, as opposed to the one where Roman Reigns is going to face Brock Lesnar.
Isn't it funny that, like, going into WrestleMania, people are going to be, like, so behind AJ and Brock as they both lose?
The only
hope
is going to WrestleMania and fucking John Cena is going to beat AJ Styles and Roman Reigns is going to beat Brock Lesnar.
I will say this, to try, as Jordan Wright had said in the community, I do try and be positive where I can be. So the one positive I could say is I think Cena and AJ could tear it up at WrestleMania. I think that they could.
It'll be a great match. It'll be the match of the show. There's no doubt about it.
But do you know what the better story is? And they're not going to do it, but the best story would be that John Cena is unsuccessful. Because then you continue to build that he desperately, that's the last thing he wants to do. He wants to have this 17th title and, you know, make people wait another year for it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it would be, and to me, I don't see why there's any rush to do it, really.
Yeah, why do you want to give him the one thing that he still wants to do straight away?
Yeah, exactly.
If I'm John Cena and I'm coming back four times a year and you've given me what I had this year, I think I might be making it three or two times a year.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to speed through some of the stuff here because it's not really that important, but there's a segment backstage where Jason Jordan comes into Kurt Angle's office and they hug and exchange Christmas greetings. Now, David, if you worked for WWE, right?
Sure.
And you were the general manager of Monday Night Raw.
Uh-huh.
And you found out that you had an illegitimate son by a lovely young African-American woman that you fucked in college and then left. And you had a son and he wrestles on your roster. Do you think that maybe you would have made an effort that first Christmas together to spend a little bit of that Christmas together before you get to the arena for a show?
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. It's your first Christmas as his father, for fuck's sake.
I think the thing that we can realize here is Kurt Angle is a humanitarian, he's a recovering addict and is a, you know, a source of hope and inspiration to people, but he's a fucking abysmal father. I mean,
it's funny because Val said literally the same thing. She was ranting about this.
And then Seth Rollins shows up. They both want Samoa Joe. But basically Angle's going to give Roman Reigns Samoa Joe tonight. And then he's going to put Jordan and Rollins together to take on Sheamus and Cesaro for the tag titles. And then Roman Reigns comes in. And that's kind of that. So we'll get to those matches in a bit. We got Hideo Itami versus Brian Kendrick. Hideo Itami gets the win in about 4 minutes with the GTS. The GTS apparently did injure Brian Kendrick's nose.
Oh, yeah. It was brutal, man. I watched the replay and I cringed.
What I will say is, like, see if CM Punk ever comes back. Maybe you should look at Itami for how to do a GTS. That guy knows how to hurt. Right?
Oof. Fucking hell, man. That was brutal.
It's like I
was actually happy that he laid it in, too. Like, I understand people go, you're not supposed to injure people, blah, blah, blah. Dude, I've known a lot of wrestlers in my day, and literally, I will always ask them, who was the toughest guy you ever got into the ring with? Do you know the answer literally every time?
Haku?
Well, they never got into the ring with Haku, but Kenta. Kenta was the toughest guy that they ever stepped foot in the ring with. And so it makes all the sense in the world that Kenta would be smashing people's noses on live TV.
We got a 6-woman tag match with Absolution against Bayley, Sasha, and Mickey James. It go about 10 minutes, and in the end, Paige hits the Rampage on Bayley, I think it was, to get the win. I guess this is just kind of setting up some Rumble stuff. But Absolution cooling down quite a bit.
Real quick.
Ooh. And Bayley and Sasha are just... I mean, it's the same conversation we have every week. This was nothing.
I feel like I'm running my head into a brick wall with Bayley. So, like, if you want my honest opinion, Kenny, I'm tired of talking about Bayley. Until she does anything different whatsoever, I'm just done with it.
Me too. Let's move on. We get shown how Samoa Joe attacked Dean Ambrose. So let's talk about Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose is injured. He had surgery last week. Now, WWE did say that he is going to be out for up to 9 months, but it appears that he only had a partial tear rather than a full tear. So do you think that he really is out for 9 months, or do you think they are playing up how long it is so that he can make a successful return before then?
They always play up how long someone's going to be out. That way it's a surprise whenever they come back early. I think he'll be out about 6 months, but I'm not a doctor. I'm not a professional whatsoever. That's just me taking a stab in the dark. I think that he'll be back before you know it. It really sucks, though. I thought that would build his heel turn, and a lot of people are going, well, this sets up his heel turn. And I'm like, yeah, like WWE Creative will actually remember that in 6 months.
The only thing I think that he's got going for it is that he is a big part of the show. And the Shield thing is, they take the Shield stuff quite seriously. So I could see them reintroducing some stuff to put.
It'd be nice.
It would be.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm just wishful thinking. I'm hoping he can make it back for Mania, but I don't know. Apparently he's tore some of the distal triceps tendon. So the fact that he's only torn some of it says there's a chance that maybe he comes back early, but it sucks for him because. But, like, I was thinking about it. Dean Ambrose hasn't really had a long break from wrestling since he got in the main roster, right? In late 2012.
Yeah, for sure. It's he was WWE's Iron Man, I believe, if you count FCW as well. Now that honor goes to, I think it's Jimmy Uso. The Uso that didn't get injured. Let me bring this up on my Twitter account so I can... thank the guy who actually did the research on this. And
I read this. You just retweeted it. It was like Jimmy Uso is only, I think it's Jimmy, but whatever Uso is, has only had the longest time without wrestling is like 20 days or something, 30 days?
34 days is the longest that he's been out. He's had gaps of 15 to 24 days where he hasn't wrestled either. He wasn't booked or, you know, what have you. But it's Jimmy Uso, and he's been doing WWE shows since June 4th, 2010, and is currently at a 982-match streak. So that's mighty impressive, and that is at Mookie Ghana for that information, Chris Harrington. So props to him, good info. That's cool to know.
Yeah, also, I would thoroughly recommend checking out the Usos interview on WWE.com recently, where they... talk about being put on the SummerSlam kickoff show, and they make a sort of impassioned plea about, you know, we are too good to be left off of the WrestleMania card, and they are 100%.
No, they, you know, it's sort of funny. We had a poll in the community on Facebook, and Tag Team of the Year was the Usos, and they were on the pre-show for SummerSlam, and they were in that stupid Battle Royal that didn't mean jack shit for WrestleMania. So, what does that say?
Yeah. I want to ask you a question quickly. I know it's very, very ahead of the time, but fuck it. If you were in charge of booking WrestleMania, Now, we did our fantasy cards that you know, within realistic expectations, but obviously the Andre the Giant Battle Royal is kind of used to get a deal on the card somehow. If it were up to you, would you keep that? Would you change it? And how? So say, for example, take this year, for example. You remember everyone who's in it. The Usos, American Alpha, Sami Zayn, etc., etc., etc. If they came to you and said, okay, we'll scrap the Battle Royal. You can put one match in its place. Do you just select three or four guys and make it something with them? Or like, do you leave 20 people off the card is my question.
Yes. Yeah, for me, I take the Jim Ross philosophy. Not everyone deserves to make it on the WrestleMania card, and WrestleMania should be used to reward people who've done a good enough job to actually make it and matter to the point to where they're on that card.
There you go. Renee Young interviews Samoa Joe. I love the touch that Renee's interviewing him, and she was a little bit more somber than she usually is, because obviously Ambrose is her husband, we know that. She asks him if he had any remorse. He says, I have to admit, absolutely not. And then he says that now Ambrose can be at home with the people he loves the most in the holidays, which is a great line to have at Renee. And yeah, Joe's just a dick, and he's fucking glorious at it.
He is one of the three most important performers on Raw. That's what I'm going to say.
Along with Stephanie and Triple H.
He's for the year of 2017, Joe had a monstrous year, and I would put him up there with Braun Strowman and The Miz.
Up next, we have Kane taking on Heath Slater. Slater did a promo saying his kids didn't get any presents this year because Kurt Angle threatened his livelihood. I don't really know how that works when he's on Raw.
Yeah, just makes you a pretty shitty dad, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, how do you get paid less when you're in a better match than you've been in 6 months?
Yeah, I don't know. That was strange to me, but sure.
Kane beats him quite handily, and then after the match, Rhino comes in. Kane ends up fighting him off and chokeslamming him too. So, I don't know. The Heath Slater-Rhino thing continues, but a win for Kane. I mean, you know what they say. If you can beat Heath Slater, it doesn't mean jack shit. You're fighting Brock Lesnar.
Oh, fuck, man.
Then that takes us into Curt Hawkins. He's got an open challenge. It's Finn Balor, because Finn Balor has to beat everybody who doesn't mean anything.
Finn Balor left his family for Christmas to go and face Curt Hawkins on Raw.
I did love that he put out a thing on. So he said that his mom had said, isn't that better though than not leaving us in wrestling on Raw? And he was like, yeah, good point. Like that. Like, up next, we get Bray Wyatt, a promo with Bray Wyatt. He says that Matt Hardy gives the people something to believe in, but he's actually just using them for his own gain. Matt Hardy's surrounded by darkness and his fireflies and Sister Abigail. Then he says, Chicago, I'm here. And I don't know whether it's this program or whatever it is, but this was the first time in, I'm maybe going to say since like the lead up to WrestleMania when he was champion, where he felt like a superstar when he came out here. And he hasn't felt that in a long time.
Yeah, but what do you think it was? Like, what's the tangible element here that made it feel bigger?
I think it's that he's finally involved in something that people actually want to see. You know, like, see when he's facing, like, Seth Rollins or Finn Balor. Nobody really wanted to see that. They were just kind of, okay, it's Bray Wyatt's thing. But, like, it feels like people, they want to see this mental Matt Hardy character. They're happy Bray Wyatt's doing something again. And he's not done the whole, you know, insert name of city, I'm here, and blown out the lantern in a while. So I think that all that together kind of it just gave people a kind of buzz. What do you think?
Yeah, it seemed to work. I have to wonder, though, how much of that is people wanting to see Matt Hardy and how much of it is wanting to see Bray Wyatt. So, what did you think of that custom Universal Championship that Bray Wyatt had made?
Yeah, that was cool, right? I love the idea. I love the idea.
Do you think you'll get buried for that, though?
Well, I don't know, because Bray Wyatt is quite a clever guy. And he's not usually the kind of guy who does anything that he's not supposed to. And so I don't know. I mean, I actually kind of love the idea that Bray Wyatt would just create his own championship, and that would be, he wouldn't want a title, you know, almost kind of like the $1 million belt for jungle people. But yeah, I don't know if we need another championship, but you know, if it's just like a Bray Wyatt prop, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, like if he were to ever get a title, I think that a custom title like that would be really awesome. That belt, whoever did that, it looked fantastic.
Apparently, those are the guys that make the belts for like TNA and somebody else. So we'll see. But anyway,
gotcha.
So Bray comes out, does his entrance. Fans are really into it. The fireflies are everywhere. And as soon as he gets in the ring, before he can blow his lantern out and the lights turn on, there's a commotion noise, and from behind, Matt Hardy in full broken, woken gear attacks Bray from behind, goes for a twist of fate. Wyatt avoids it. Fans are chatting delete with Matt Hardy at Bray Wyatt, and Matt takes the mic and laughs maniacally and makes noises as Bray Wyatt just kind of looks at him going, "What the fuck are you?"
The look that Bray Wyatt gave was the best part of the entire thing, actually. I thought that Bray Wyatt stole the show from Matt Hardy this week.
Good, because it should not be Matt Hardy versus Jobber. You know, it should be...
Right, right, exactly. It should have this marquee feel to it. So, I completely agree.
I really enjoyed this, as I have done, really. I mean, my only criticism so far... I'm not crazy about the woken glass break thing, but I can live with it. It's not really going to kill it for me. But the thing that I find really interesting, and I know that, again, I'm an optimist all the time, so people are going to roll their eyes at me, but some people are like, oh, you know, this Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy thing's not working or whatever. It's like, they're telling a story. They're building something. Like, do you want everything given to you in 3 weeks? Like,
some folks do, Kenny.
Do you remember that classic Hogan and Savage match at WrestleMania 5? And they only had 3 SmackDowns to build that. Not a fucking year of television. But what do you think so far? We obviously had the, this is the first live appearance of Matt Hardy in his new woken gear attacking Bray Wyatt. What did you think?
I'll be honest, I think Vince thinks the funniest part of the woken character is the maniacal laugh, and that's not the funniest part of the Hardy character, the woken Hardy character.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I think there's that disconnect there to where I don't know if we're going to get exactly what we want out of this, Kenny, but I don't know. I'm kind of leery about it. Because last week was a step in the excellent direction. This week was a step back for Matt Hardy, I think.
Do you think if everything had been the same, but after he did the attack and got the mic that he'd said something, would that have made it better?
Yeah, instead of just laughing like an idiot. Yes, I do.
I didn't have a problem with laughing. I just thought the laughing went on too long.
It did, but see, that's kind of boiling down to the Vince thing of not knowing exactly why this is funny, you know?
So there's also that thing that Vince McMahon's got a little bit, and you see, I think it was in the 24 documentary of WrestleMania 31 they were showing it. Like, Vince likes to, you know, give things time to breathe. Sometimes you should not feel like you can breathe after something.
Yeah.
You should feel like you're just like, oh, fuck, was that just a roller coaster there?
Yeah. No, for sure. Absolutely for sure. I completely and entirely agree.
So we'll see where that goes. Sheamus and Cesaro are complaining about having to defend the tag titles. Cesaro gave Sheamus the gift of a Seth Rollins action figure. Sheamus said he couldn't wait to break it, just like he would break the real thing. Sheamus pulls out a Jason Jordan action figure. Cesaro said that Rollins doesn't want Jordan as a partner and Angle doesn't want Jordan as a son. is Cesaro and Sheamus the bromance that we all wish we could have?
I already have a bromance that's better than that, Kenny, and that's with you.
Aww, I can assure you of this. I think more of you than to give you one of those doofus action figures.
you would never give me an action figure that would hurt my feelings, Kenny.
I like to get you action figures of people who are more over, like Stephanie. So we got up next, we got Enzo Amore as Santa Claus with Drew Gulak and Daivari. We got a six-man tag, a Miracle on 34th Street fight, Cedric Alexander, Mustafa Ali, and Akira Tozawa against Enzo, Drew, and Daivari. These gimmick holiday matches are... they crush my soul every time. So I can't... I kind of check out these all the time. Did I miss anything?
No. This was just... It's soul-scorching. That's the only way I can describe it. It's like if somebody found a house made of gingerbread that was inhabited by sentient gingerbread people, and they were so happy, and then they took a flamethrower to it, Kenny. That's a lot like what this was like.
Well, the most interesting thing that happened was after the match, when backstage Enzo and Nia Jax, they were under the mistletoe, and the fans were going fucking nuts.
Yeah,
The idea that Enzo and Nia might kiss. And Alexa Bliss all of a sudden comes in. She's like, you know, we need to go. It's to do with the Women's Royal Rumble. And Nia's disappointed she had to leave. And Enzo says to Alexa, well, Merry Christmas to you too. And walks away. This is endearingly sweet. And it's strange, isn't it?
I'm intrigued by it, which is the biggest compliment I can give to shoving Nia Jax in the 205 Live division.
Although I would love to see a reluctant Drew Gulak have to face Nia Jax.
Oh, it would be lovely, actually. I'm still holding out hope, Kenny. Still holding out hope that Drew Gulak is actually who she's trying to get close to.
That's the dream. Roman Reigns has an interview saying that you know, he didn't care what Joe had to say. He wasn't leaving Chicago without his title, and Joe would learn that if you hurt one of his brothers, then he will hurt you. Now, Roman Reigns might be 2 years late to the party of saving Dean Ambrose, but I'm glad he got there eventually. That's the main thing.
Tortoise in the hair.
Exactly. So we get Roman Reigns versus Samoa Joe for the IC title. The match goes about 12 minutes. Lots and lots of hot action on it. Joe does a suicide dive at one point. He's targeting Roman Reigns' elbow. There's a point where he has the Coquina clutch on, and you think it's done. Really, really intense, kind of not near fall, near submission.
It was right next to the ropes, but I thought it was great because as he was reaching for the ropes, Joe let up on that ankle around the waist and put it around the forearm to stop him from doing that. Really good spot.
And then Reigns headbutts his way free from Joe. The referee pulled Reigns out of the corner and hooked his arm when Reigns just went back to booting Samoa Joe. Reigns shoves the referee in the heat of the action, and the ref calls for the bell. Samoa Joe wins by DQ. Post-match, Roman hits a Superman punch and knocks Joe out. They brawl. Reigns is throwing ring steps at Joe. And Joe picks up a chair. There's all this stuff's going on. But Joe's heading backstage with referees while Roman Reigns is being held back. I think the compliment I would give to this is that I think this was a no-win situation going in, and they managed to get a win out of it at the end from me.
I don't really know why Roman Reigns went completely ballistic and totally healed it up against Samoa Joe.
Because Samoa Joe injured his brother.
So, like... To me, I viewed it as Roman Reigns intentionally got himself disqualified because he's a good heel. That way he wouldn't have to defend the title any further. He took the loss, Kenny, so he didn't actually avenge anyone. He took the loss, but he did so to wiggle free of having to defend his title like a true heel should.
Well, let me ask you, if we were in a faction together and somebody injured me, Would you go after them in my honor?
I would, Kenny. I would go after them, and I would beat them clean in the middle of the ring in a wrestling match. And maybe before or after that, I would run them over with a Hummer, similar to how Billy Kidman ran over Kevin Nash, or whoever the fuck he ran over in WCW.
I like your style. I like your style.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That way I win on both accounts. A, they're dead, so they'll never fuck with you again. And B, I beat them cleanly in a wrestling contest.
I did think Joe looked great here, though, for pretty much most of it.
Joe's always perfect. A excellent babyface turn for Samoa Joe tonight, Kenny. Very sympathetic. Very sympathetic, Kenny. The sympathy was just oozing off of him with his facial expressions and how he looked like he was in pain as Roman Reigns, the dastardly heel, kept throwing him into ring posts and everything. Very sympathetic. I completely agree. Great babyface turn.
I love the idea that you watch Raw with different commentary.
I technically do. Val's just piping in the commentary into my ear, so there you go.
Seth Rollins was watching backstage on a monitor. Jordan comes in. They kind of talk about, you know, putting their differences aside. There's a bit where Jordan says that, you know, Seth has to admit that he makes a good replacement for Ambrose. And this is just when Rollins is kind of like trying to get in this. You know, Rollins is trying to play ball here. He's going, okay, you know, I don't really want to team with you, but I do want to get my hands on Sheamus and Cesaro, so, you know, for the greater good, I'll do it. And then Jordan, like a true arsehole, has to ruin it and say, come on, though, I'm a pretty good replacement for Dean Ambrose.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like, it's like if your wife dies and then the new wife comes in and then says to your son, I mean, I make a pretty good replacement for your mom, right? Like, that's the level of dictum here. And then Rollins says, you know, as good as you think you are, you'll never be better than Ambrose. And then Jordan says, right, I'll be better. Oh, I love him. He's so good.
So good.
Oh, Jason Jordan, like, dark horse for, like, story of the year. In terms of a sort of, like, thread. This guy is just one of my favorites.
I predicted it, Kenny. Voice of Wrestling, big ups. I said that Jason Jordan would be a highlight of the show if he ended up turning heel. Sure enough, he has, and he is.
He is. He absolutely is. Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas are out in Christmas jumpers and hats, singing Christmas songs. And then Kurt Angle comes out and says, well, you have a Secret Santa match. And they sang Jingle Bells until Braun Strowman came out and murdered them in cold blood. And Braun Strowman saved Christmas.
As always, it was kind of obvious the second they hit the ring, you kind of knew what was happening, though, right?
Yeah. It had to be Braun. That's the good thing about Braun is, like, Braun's one of those only times when something happens and you go, God, I really wish Braun would come out and kill somebody, and he usually does. So it was good. So we got that. They started playing like 25 years of Raw flashbacks, so they're starting to kind of get that in our mind, because that's the next big show, really, on January 22nd. So Alexa Bliss comes out. She wishes the fans a Merry Christmas. 2017's been her year. It is a cool concept that Alexa Bliss opens the year as SmackDown Women's Champion and closes the year as Raw Women's Champion.
Yeah, with a little wiggle room without her having one of those championships too. It's been it's been the year of Alexa Bliss, the top woman on either side of the coin, I would say.
Yeah, I think the thing about her is that even though I don't think she's as good a wrestler as Sasha,
obviously not,
Charlotte, but character wise, she's been stronger than probably both of those combined.
Yeah, no, so, I would agree. It's been a good year for her. She's not my favorite by any stretch of the means, but real recognizes real, Kenny. That's a phrase that I heard on the internet from children who are half my age.
It was funny. At Christmas dinner yesterday, I was sitting with my friend, and her nephew, who was 16, was there, and he's quite quiet and stuff, so, you know, you really just kind of have to talk at him, and just, yeah. and he enjoys that, whatever. And at one point, I was about to eat my food, and I said, Mikey, you're half my age. You're 16 years old. I said, I want you to enjoy this fucking moment, right? Because one day, you're going to be sitting in my seat and see a 16-year-old staring across at you with a lot of hope and spunk, and you're going to think, God, I wish I was 16 again. And that was my Christmas message to him, and he awkwardly nodded and continued to eat his food.
Yeah, I do that to every teenager I meet as well. I'm just like, don't make the same life decisions.
God, we've not gone to regrets podcast computer for a while. So Alexa says, you know, 2017 was her year. The women had their faces against the glass ceiling. She punched right through it. They showed footage of the Rumble announcement. And she said, you know, you're welcome because I made this happen. And then Asuka comes out. Big response for Asuka coming out. She cuts off Alexa Bliss. She comes in and she says, I'm entering the Women's Royal Rumble match. And I will win because nobody's ready for Asuka. She drops the mic, nervously smiles at Alexa Bliss, and then kicks her in the side of the head. What do we think, David?
Kind of pokes holes in your excellent theory of Asuka winning the championship at Royal Rumble and then facing Ronda Rousey, huh?
I have a new theory.
Oh, new theory, let's hear it.
Ronda Rousey is not going to debut at the Royal Rumble.
Okay.
Asuka's going to win the Royal Rumble, and somehow Ronda beats Alexa for the belt before WrestleMania.
Oh, shit, son.
Maybe get like
real up in this bitch.
Maybe like Alexa Bliss has to defend her title at Elimination Chamber and, I guess, a mystery opponent.
Yeah, possibly. I will say they have done a fairly good job after the fluky start of protecting Asuka.
Yeah, Asuka's done really well, and I the thing that I'm here's just my kind of, you know, looking at WWE. We've watched WWE for like what, a combination of about 45, 50 years, all in.
Yeah, about 50 years. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
I know. But knowing how they present things, and this isn't even a bad thing. This did not make me think that we're getting Asuka versus Alexa Bliss at WrestleMania.
No, I think the purpose of this was to set up Asuka, actually.
Yes, it intrigues me as to who Asuka would be facing.
Yeah.
And intrigue is good, and you know what? I hope Asuka wins the Royal Rumble. I really do.
Oh, yeah. No, she... If her first loss is a Royal Rumble, that's sort of deflating the air out of the proverbial tire. Or inflatable tiger.
Or inflatable tiger, whatever inflatable animal you're into. I'm not going to judge.
Right? Yeah, exactly. They sell the inflatable sheep sex dolls, Kenny, at the mall.
Why do I need to know that?
Well, I just figured you know a lot of weird, strange people, Kenny, and I just figured as a Boxing Day gift, you may want to run out to your nearest mall and get an inflatable sheep that has a dick holster in it.
Of course it does. What else would I want rather than a dick holster for my inflatable sheep? I thought it was a good angle, though, to set up Asuka in the Royal Rumble and stuff and intrigue for WrestleMania. So, yeah, like you say, they seem to be rebounding the Asuka stuff after some kind of small blips on the radar. So, main event time, Seth Rollins and Jason Jordan against Sheamus and Cesaro for the tag team titles. It goes about 15 minutes, but in the end, Jason Jordan hits a neck breaker on Cesaro, gets the pin. Seth and Jason are your new reluctant tag team champions. Corey Graves says that Jordan's won tag titles with two different partners, proving he's legit. And then Corey Graves says that he guarantees that Dean Ambrose would be smiling watching them win the tag. I'm not sure if I'd be smiling if I was Dean Ambrose. talk to me about what do you think of the match and where do they go from here with Seth and Jordan as the reluctant tag champs. They had to move some stuff around. What say you? What's going to happen? Break this down.
This was interesting, I thought. And I think this speaks more to the WWE's view of Seth Rollins than anything, because I feel like they think that Seth is a top guy if he can pull this off. Yeah, this was a bit strange. They kind of telegraphed it, though, whenever they announced it was the main event, you know? And this was rather unfortunate. I wanted to see the Bar close out Raw as tag team champions for the year because they were easily the best tag team of the year for Monday Night Raw. So a bit disappointed there. This story does have intrigue, but I don't think it has very long legs, Kenny. I think that the longevity on this one is going to be swiped out from underneath it rather swiftly. Yeah, I think this is a good short-term story, though. sort of like those. It kind of reminded me of like hotshot storytelling in the Attitude Era, to where something comes up and you just throw something against the wall and see if it sticks.
Yeah, and we will see if it does.
I will say Booker T was hilarious on commentary here with how terrible he was.
I'm telling you, the man has CTE. Can someone test him, please? I thought that they did, for having Dean Ambrose have to be kind of gone last week, I thought that they did a good job in changing up the pieces a little bit, but not making it feel unorganic. Like, I think the idea that Jason Jordan gets in the match because he's Kurt's son, and, you know, he's always been the whiny guy that couldn't get it done, then he helps get it done here, he gets the pinfall. It was all quite interesting, I think sets up a lot of key kind of pieces going forward. So, because I think the question now with Jason Jordan is, does he immediately turn heel? Does he stay for a little bit longer? I think he's an interesting character because he's flawed and he's different, and it's not obvious what's going to happen and when.
Yeah, it's I'm intrigued, man. I'm definitely all in for it. I don't foresee them holding the tag titles longer than, say, they won't go into WrestleMania as champions. I'll say that.
Also, the Jason Jordan cool accolade is the first ever wrestler to hold the NXT, Raw, and SmackDown tag team titles.
Good for him.
There you go.
There you go.
And you know what? I think that Jason Jordan deserves to close out 2017 with a title. I think he's done his job.
He's done leaps and bounds with what he was given. But let's be honest, he was also given a lot.
Yeah, he was, and but he's done a lot with it. You know, I don't think Jason Jordan would still be around in this spot if he when the character wasn't clicking, if he wasn't in the ring having such great matches like he did.
And kudos to them for actually turning him heel too. That's key. If he would have stayed a babyface, oh boy.
Yeah, and but also it's good because it's layered, right? He's not a complete heel. He's not a complete babyface. He's a character, and motivations change and things happen, and you know. Those, I think the turning point for him was those matches with Roman and Cena, actually. You know, the build that Roman and Cena had for No Mercy, I think the guy that actually got the rub out of that those weeks was Jason Jordan.
Yeah.
Because that's the guy I'm still talking about, and I'm not talking about that match anymore. So.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Overall, though, a better Raw Christmas than I thought we were going to get. Overall, what would your score be for this one out of 10, David?
I would go with a baseline 5, I think. It wasn't amazing. It wasn't pitiful. There were a few parts that crushed my Christmas spirit, but just like Father Christmas, pardon, Person Christmas, it returned by the end of the night with some stellar stuff with the Asuka intrigue, and the title change wasn't what I wanted, but it's intriguing nonetheless. So, yeah. Middling 5, I would say, Kenny. What about you?
Yeah, I'd give it a 5 as well. I think it's the definition of an average show.
Yeah.
Like, the biggest match that Raw has to offer at the Royal Rumble is Braun, Kane, and Brock, and there was nothing really that advanced anything after last week's weak beginning to that story, so that hard to...
Yeah.
The Christmas stuff was terrible. But I thought the Roman Reigns Samoa Joe match was really, really good. I enjoyed the main event. I thought the Matt Hardy Bray Wyatt stuff was good. I understand the criticisms people have with the laughing at the end. But overall, I still think it's in a good place. And they're building Asuka for the Royal Rumble. So there was good stuff on it. But I think that for as much good stuff as there was also as much stuff that dragged it down, which is why I'm going to give it a 5.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So, David, as we close out, and this is the end of our sort of festivity here, what is your favorite Christmas song? Because that's what we're going to play to close out today.
Oh, man, that's... Ooh. You know, we're still in the Christmas spirit, you guys, and while I love the likes of Last Christmas and such, I think we're actually going to go with a little bit of Home Alone style, rocking around the Christmas tree, Kenny.
There you go. We opened the Raw Rundown with my favorite Christmas song, I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day, which is ironic because I don't wish it could be Christmas every day, but I love the song. And we're closing it with David's favourite, which is Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. And as you hear this, just imagine Kevin with all his imaginary people in the house pretending to have a party so he doesn't get robbed by grown men. Thanks for listening, everybody. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody, to you and yours.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see every couple tries to stop. Rocking around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring.